the biggest stories from the pages of the London Free Press and lfpress.com. This is the London Free Press Podcast with your host, Rachel Gilbert.
Welcome to the London Free Press Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Gilbert. A new 60-unit micro shelter development for London's homeless is on the way. But first, city councillors have to decide where to put it. City staff are recommending an industrial area in London's southeast end. Today, I'm talking with London Free Press City Hall reporter Jack Moulton about the plan, what's included in the micro shelter development, and where it'll go. Hey, Jack, how are you?
I'm good, Rachel. Great to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you. I know it's been a little bit since we've chatted. So this seems like a really major development. There's still a lot of moving parts because this is kind of the preliminary. We're still kind of in the preliminary stages of this development. Is that right?
Absolutely. So this all only got started like a couple weeks ago. With Mayor Josh Morgan issuing a strong mayor order that's from the provincial powers for staff to investigate opening a sort of modular micro shelter, campus, before year end, in order to, get some beds open for the winter, but also to keep them open through the end of March 2027. So about a year and a half ish. And so staff have now come back with a report outlining a possible location. As you're well aware, with anything regarding homelessness or supportive housing, anything like that, location is always a huge thing.
Yes.
Understandably, neighbors aren't, delighted to see that cropping up in their neighborhood. And we've seen that with the Hubs model so far.
Yeah.
So what staff have come back with is, in order to try and make things easier, they were looking for city-owned land, and they were also looking to get away from residential or commercial areas in order to minimize that that pushback.
Right.
So what they've come back with is a huge farm lot, city-owned, at 1710 Wilton Grove Road. So that's a little bit east of, where Highbury crosses the 401. So this is right bordering the 401 on the south side of it.
Mm.
And viewers might be familiar with an industrial park at that area.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically suggesting a little part of the lot, basically right at the intersection of Max Brose Drive and Cheese Factory Road, where they're going to put these.
Okay. So what's included in this micro shelter? There's 60 units, but what exactly does that mean? What's included?
Yeah, so the idea is to have 60 units. At this stage, there's not a lot of, concrete details settled yet, but the idea is to get 60 units to have washrooms, showers, common spaces, space for agencies to work in, and that sort of thing. But you also have to factor in like stuff like fencing and security and, winter maintenance, being able to get in and out for emergency vehicles and things of that sort.
Are these going to be like tiny homes? Because we've seen tiny homes in other cities. Other cities have done something like that.
Yeah. So that was the wording used, was modular micro shelters. On the smaller side, and in their staff report going to politicians today, October 8th, the first taste of this politicians will get, they're talking about stuff like washrooms and showers being in trailers in order to get this going in, on short notice.
Okay.
And they're looking, in order to meet that tight timeline, they're also for the shelters themselves looking to get into group buying. In the report, they mention the Ontario Education Collaborative Marketplace Modular Buildings Vendor of Record to try and get a connection fast.
So is there going to be many different structures then, I guess, there? Or like, because you mentioned they want some workspaces, so they're going to have a community area where people can hang out, plus all of their own individual houses, I guess.
Yeah, so remains to be seen exactly what this will look like. But to get an idea, one of the requirements staff were looking at was a site that was at least 1.5 acres in size. Nothing too colossal, but still pretty sizable.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned they want to get this started before the end of 2025, is that right?
That's right.
And is this year round, or it's going to go till 2027? And what's kind of the long-term plan for this? Because we've seen in past years they've done winter housing only, right? And then that doesn't continue through the summer. So is this going to be different?
Yeah, so this will be a little bit different from years past. Viewers may remember that the city put up some winter shelters at the Fanshawe Golf Course in a similar bid that was a little bit far removed from the city. This site is about 11 kilometers away from Dundas and Adelaide, the area where a lot of services for the homeless are in Old East Village. So this time around, it will be a little bit more permanent in the sense that these will be staying here for, like I said, through March 2027. And so that's roughly a year and a half, and they're planning on running it the entire time. The city's already found a source of funding. They're going to pull from their own reserves to make this happen. The early estimate is that this costs about 7 million. About 3 million just to get the buildings and get everything sorted, including utility hookups, which will probably be pretty pricey. There's some in the area, staff say, but that still won't be cheap. But also 4 million to operate it for that year and a half. And so that'll involve multiple agencies, things like security and garbage pickup, winter maintenance, things of that sort.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask if local agencies will be involved. Will they be coming and going? Will they have, you mentioned they'll have offices there to work at.
As of now, there's no service provider signed onto this project. That's one thing that city staff are looking to do next after, they get an endorsement and an approval from council. The trick is, though, this is if you think about it, this is a pretty serious undertaking. Trying to, like, if you think about a supportive housing building in the city proper, like a real permanent one that houses this amount of people, like that requires a lot of staff. To manage people and to take part in the different like programs and services that the building offers, not to mention like security, like you need meals prepped, again, garbage and snow pickup, things of that sort. So an agency still needs to sign on to this. But in conversation with one of the agencies who does these homeless services, London Cares, and the head, Chris Moss, I talked to her for my story. She was mentioning how, because there's so many components to this, can one agency really take on all of it? Do they have the capacity for that? Will multiple have to partner together? Probably. There'll have to be healthcare on site of some sort. So does that require buy-in from more agencies? Things of that nature. So still a lot to sort through.
There's such a big push for homelessness initiatives and getting affordable housing online, supportive housing as well. We had that $25 million that was donated, and a lot of agencies are coming together to work to kind of get some of these initiatives up and going. And then, we have a huge plan like this, which seems like a great idea, but then you do have to find all the people to support it and the people to work there. So what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Do you have all the people ready to go, or do you have the plan in place, I guess, first? I don't know. I guess there's not one right answer, but the similar things have happened in other cities, right? So are we looking to other cities at all for maybe what they've been doing, taking some of their plans and implementing them here at all?
Yeah, so in conversation, both conversations I've had with the mayor and also my colleague Norm DeBono, who initially reported on the mayor issuing this order, there was reference to what are known as transitional cabins in Chatham-Kent. So they're pretty small, about 100 square feet each. They have on-site security, trauma-informed care, case management, life skills programs, mental health and addiction use, that's going well, apparently. So they're looking to help. They're hoping to replicate that here.
Who gets these homes? Have we gotten that far yet? Are there applications people have to fill out? How does that work?
To be honest, not sure so far. That might hinge on whoever ends up operating the site, whether it's probably not one agency, but multiple, and who they decide to open it up to, because there's still a lot of work to go here. Just looking at the staff report, They still have to sort of survey the site. Right now, it's a cornfield.
Yeah.
The city owns it, but they lease it out for farming. So there's still crops there. They still have to clear it out. You know, they have to come up with a final site plan for how this is going to look. You know, it's not far from the 401, so they got to get approval from the MTO to just be within that catchment area.
Okay.
They have to order the buildings themselves and also, again, find an operator of this site,
Sure.
then find a firm that's willing to do security and maintenance and that sort of thing.
Okay. So
So, a lot left to go.
we're in the very early stages. What was some of the criteria that you, as you did mention some of it in choosing the site, because that's where we're at right now, is just deciding on a site and getting that approved.
Exactly. And easier said than done. As I mentioned, requires 1.5 acres. Josh Morgan mentioned being away from commercial and residential areas, like trying not to have too much of an impact. And
Right.
it's in an industrial park. It's about 1 kilometer away from the nearest business. You know, it has to be, of course, outside of a floodplain, not have any archaeological issues, not on land that's, you know, shovel ready to be developed. You know, you don't want to hold anything up in that regard. But they also wanted it to be away. They didn't want it to be in a park or something of that sort, and they wanted it
Sure.
to be at least 400 meters away from daycares or schools.
Right. So a lot of different things factoring in there. Have you talked to any local businesses in the area? It's an industrial area, so there's not a lot of people there, but how are the businesses in that area feeling about potentially using that site?
Yeah, it's a good leg day if you want to go door knocking in that area. But yeah, there are a lot of industrial properties, obviously. The closest business was a boarding, like a dog boarding facility about 1 kilometer away. I did chat with the owner there. And he was mostly just concerned with when I ended up reaching him. He mentioned how he had found out 20 minutes ago while out of the city, like in an airport. So was concerned with the short notice, obviously. Didn't want to dismiss it out of hand, though. He said he recognizes the challenge the city has right now, but is just eager to learn more, and especially how, you know, what the plan is to minimize the impact in the area, because this is a remote area. Like there is one weekday bus route that operates in this area that goes through the industrial park. But it raises the question of how people are going to get around. Are services going to help shuttle people out? Are they going to rely on this bus route that doesn't run all the time? You know, are people going to be trying to walk out to Highbury and, you know, some of the businesses out there? But yeah, mostly just taken off guard, understandably, but eager to know more without, you know, dismissing it out of hand.
Well, it seems like an interesting idea. I think a lot of people are eager to know more. So, what are the next steps? As we're recording this, the City Council committee is having a meeting about it.
Yeah, so the Community and Protective Services Committee, the 5-member body, and is meeting later today to at least get endorsement. This will still have to go to council next week on the on October 14th for final approval, and then from there go through some of those steps I mentioned. You know, ordering the shelters themselves, finding a service provider, getting the site ready, and also planning what the site will look like. It's all got a condensed timeline.
Okay. Well, I know that you'll have more on this at lfpress.com if you want to check out Jack's stories, because you'll be following this and see it come to fruition eventually. So thank you so much, Jack. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Rachel.